the mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away ere break of day.
G'day, sir, and welcome to Tales of Wales, the pod that never fails to branch off into new realms and to twist and weave the boundaries of history and magic. And as ever, the mythic beast from the South Walian East, the man who can make stories about simply queuing for a beer, sound like Arthurian legends, Sir Kaji, Knight of the Round Table.
That's a very, very, generous, kind intro right there. I also love how you've changed your tune as well. Usually when I tell those stories, you're like, oh, here's another one. another bit of patter about waiting in a queue for a can.
Yeah, I was being slightly mean. Well, not mean, taking the my call. I was also trying to think of a comparison to say you're the Clive Owen to my... trying to think of someone else who's played King Arthur, because Clive Owen was the King Arthur when we were growing up in that King Arthur film.
What's his name?
Lancelot is Johan Griffith. Oh,
I was going to say the guy from Monty Python who did it in Holy Grail. I can't think of it. He's the one I don't know. I can never think of his name.
Yeah. Well, also, who's that like Cockney? Who's the guy in Sexy Beast?
Which one now? Oh, Ray Winston.
Yeah, Ray Winston plays at the balls. Yeah. You should say I'm the Clive Owen to my Ray Winston, because I'm Ray Winston and you are a bit Clive Owen.
Such a balls, yeah, absolutely. You know what I love about that film is that like they give everyone. I think we should actually. I watched not long ago and was bitterly disappointed, right? But I really need it, the beers I had, but I needed like company, because I think the company could really rip it. But the I love how in it everyone's got like this specialism, right? It's got an actual stacked cast. It's got fucking Mads Mikkelsen in it. As like a secondary character. Keira Knightley, Joel Edgerton, Johan Griffith, fucking Heart of Wales himself. And but like everyone's got their own sort of shtick, you know, because like there's a guy as well, what's his name? Ray Stevenson. He's dead now, God rest his soul. He's like he's the really big brutal unit, and he's got a big axe, I think, right? And then like Mads Mikkelsen is like, he's got like a Saracen blade, you know, he's got like a skimtar type thing. Joel Edgerton's like amazing with a bow and arrow, and they've all got their
Joel
thing
Edgerton's
all this.
It?
Yeah, Joel Edgerton's like the
how old is
the
he
archer.
He came out in like 2004.
Yeah, it must be one of his earliest roles that he's in.
Shit.
And then, so everyone's got their thing. And guess what they've given Bors? Ray Winston, who's by far the tubbiest character in it, right?
Well,
they've
like
given
quick
him like,
knives
yeah, these tiny quick yeah, like dagger that. Knives, like assassin knives. And it was like, they're meant to be for like quick, nimble fighters.
Well, do you remember the PlayStation 2 game was fucking amazing of it, or the Xbox game it was?
They literally based it off the old Lord of the Rings games, didn't they? Yeah. It was the exact same mechanics. It was
we played the first round. Me and my mate played the first round, and you're on a horse, and the horse was like unmanageable. And me and my mate were like, this is fucking shit. And then we changed it to like, when you get past the first mission, you then like play it like the Lord of the Rings game. And I was like, this is the best fucking
game
in the world.
It's exactly the same. I'm pretty sure they give one of the characters two swords to be like Legolas for the mechanics from the original game.
They have to
have made it horses as well in that first level, because in the film they're like the fabled horse lords, and then they're never on their horses like in the entire film.
Far too expensive for the rest of the film. I've had two tins of beans today, and it is playing Jimmy Havoc on my tum-tum. So if you hear the occasional ripper.
You've packed in the tins, the alcohol tins, and I've gone Zwei bean tins.
I need some sort of beanie. Yeah, well, I'm off the booze tonight. Only because tomorrow we're going to a Wines and Crimes evening.
Oh, I know.
With our wives.
I should have had a break tonight. I really should have. I've been on it. Like, well, I say on it. I've had a drink for the last 5 days. Not anything mad.
I mean, that is quite mad.
Friday was tame. Saturday, I did have a lot of drink, to be fair. Sunday, we went to the pub.
What did you do Saturday? Oh, it was an old... You and your wife had
a Saturday, me and my wife just sat in the garden and got fucked up. It was great. And then Sunday, we went out with the gang, didn't we, for a Sunday lunch, which was lush.
And only me and you were keen for like proper Sunday beers, which was a bit...
As I said at the time, I was like, we used to be a gang of warriors. What's going on now? We're getting too old, too long in the term. But like, I only had a few there. So I had a few with you guys. I think what we had three.
I'm glad we stopped there because they were glorious pints. And like, we were in a beautiful beer garden, but we all had to like, you know, we weren't on the sesh. Well, so like, if you have four, you then.
As usual, I came home and do me then. I had a few more, but I didn't. What are you going to do? Arrest me? It wasn't mad. I had like three more, maybe. So like a total of what's that? Three pints, three cans. That's nothing really.
What's that amongst friends?
That's barely even counts. And then Monday, then right. So my sister-in-law's had her baby, so I got a new nephew now, elder Jacob Amidi, a Welsh Lebanese mix, an absolute hybrid, a potent mix.
That is a hell of a combo.
Yeah, an absolute.
I can smell a freedom fighter in that.
I was going to say,
that is going to be some kind of a racehorse,
he'd be a Kentucky Derby winner, wouldn't he?
He's a Kentucky. I got myself a Kentucky racehorse.
Absolutely. I was trying to introduce him with some like esteem, and I've absolutely shattered over Kentucky's a Kentucky horse, he is. But no, so that was like celebratory then. So my in-laws came over yesterday. And we had some champagne, and I, of course, because I can't fucking help myself, I had a couple more drinks after that. Again, not a mental one. Was in bed by fucking like half eight or something like that. Like very, very tame. But and then today I'm back on it for a couple more for this. But it's just you and your body's like, come on, just give me a fucking break now. Like, let me recover a little bit.
I'm being good in the week, so like I'm having nice weekends, but I'm like being pretty strict and just having high protein, low fat. A hell of a lot of beans, and it's
maxing your bean intake. Your macros with your beans are huge.
And also, because we're going out tomorrow for booze, I'm limiting my calories today and on Thursday, so I can have a lot tomorrow.
This is what I was thinking. Like, I was like, another night, and then it was like tomorrow. Oh, now we're on the fucking wine tomorrow. We're going to that. Keen listeners will have heard. We're going to the wine and crimes gals night thing tomorrow. It's
tarts and something.
Tarts like and a, streetwalkers or something, is it?
And we're taking our wives, which will be quite fun, so they get to experience some.
Are you the same as me, where I think we deserve like a pat on the back for thinking of that?
Yeah. I think guys, we are actually taking
originally,
our wives.
It was definitely in my mind. It was just me and you glugging some plonk at the end of a table, being nuisances.
Well, because like my brain is so like stupidly male. I'm like, well, it's wine. I've got to bring my wife. Of course, that just reeks of, oh, that's a wife experience.
But like, when I said to me, I just remember saying to him, oh, we're doing, you know, we got invited to this wine and crimes thing. Do you want to go? Oh, yeah, go on. Then I was like, brownie points right there. Like just for thinking of
the
it, like
bare minimum.
The absolute bare minimum.
I'm keen for, I think it's like four glasses of wine, which I was trying to think, like, all right, so with that, I want to have beer whilst I have the wine.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do the old side beer routine, I'm assuming.
But then that'll
completely
take away from the point of, like, you know, they put time and effort into pairing these, like, nice wines. So I'm thinking...
It's wasted on us anyway.
maybe. Are we going to go for drinks after? I won't be able to go for drinks before, just because... Oh, this is a chat for off-air.
It's quite early, though, isn't it? No. We probably will when we... Wine will go straight to our heads, so we'll be fine.
All right.
Sorry, before we go on, there's something I keep meaning to say, and I constantly forget. I texted you about this the night it happened.
Not like us.
I know. I need to do a shout out to a guy named Grey Dog and his brother Liam. Right, these guys, I bumped into them in Cardiff. I think I texted you about it. I sent you a little pic of me looking absolutely howling next to him. And basically, they recognised my voice from when I said, "You can't beat a Sunday sesh." And then, so we were out with our friends from Newport. This guy came over, said hello to the guy from Newport that we were with. Mm-hmm. He was talking about, we were chatting, and it was the bank holiday. And I said the classic, "Can't beat a Sunday sesh." That was that conversation done.
The catchphrase, I'm always saying.
You know what I'm saying. Yeah, you've heard me say it a million times. But basically on our way out, we were saying bye, and the guy said, this is a mad question. He said, but you do you do the Tales for Wales podcast? And I was like, I do the Tales for Wales podcast. And he said, I knew I recognised your voice. He said, it's when you said the thing about the Sunday sesh. And I was like, oh, the catchphrase. You're coming back to the catchphrase, is it?
It's a real sizzle reel, if you will.
But honestly, I had Wayne O'Gleasty Gleast, right? As we say in Welsh. What was that? A smile from ear to ear.
Smile from ear to ear.
Because I was like, oh, I'm fucking famous. I'm big time now.
The world's most famous man.
World's man.
I'm Brint Turvel.
The place we walked into, I was like, do I have to pay for this entry now? Come on, you know who I am?
Listen, guys, come on, I'll be here all night. Listen, don't rush all at
does
once.
Does this change your mind? Nothing like a Sunday sesh, am I right? So yeah, I didn't even shout out to them. I keep forgetting. Sorry, Grey Dog. Sorry, your brother Liam.
Yeah. Sorry, your brother Liam. That's such a funny way of saying it. Sorry, your brother
Liam.
I'm
doing it verbatim from my notes because they said Grey Dog and brother Liam. He might
not be his brother. He's a priest. Man of the cloth.
He's his priest. He brought him out after communion. It was a Sunday as well. It makes
Grey
sense.
Grey Dog, brother Liam, you can join me for open mass.
All my friends call me Grey Dog. This is brother Liam. He's
put in the cassock.
Yeah, I was going to say, now I think about it, he had one of those huge hats that the bishops wear.
And he was collecting all his gold just as he was leaving.
He wasn't partaking of he wasn't imbibing of the beer either.
The only bishop I ever picture is the one from Robin Hood when he gets all of his gold and thrown out of the window.
Yeah.
You can pay for your way to hell.
On your way to hell. Yeah.
Need a night together watching films, I reckon, mate.
We got a horror one coming up, haven't we? But we need like
bad
a proper. We need. Oh no! Don't tell me the dream's dead.
The dream might be dead for that. I'll speak to you after. No, I'm meant to be in London. I'm meant to be in work, so I'll.
We'll re-pencil in something else. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Maybe just the day before or something. Well, we'll catch up in a minute. It's not like it's mad how often we speak, and it's like we're catching up like old friends who've not seen each other in 20 years. I saw you 2 days ago.
Well, literally, for the listeners, on Sunday we went together, right? And there's a few of the boys and like the wives and everything like that we don't see all that often, right?
Yeah.
Guess who ended up sat next to each other on a table? Me and Franks. And I was thinking, we speak so much. We probably don't need this, but I'm happy with it.
And also, and we're
getting on like a little, on fire, as usual.
But we had mates. Oh, well, my godson sat next to us. Who does like me and Jack. I'd probably say the most out of all the other people.
Because you are an absolute Pied Piper with him, mate. He's he loves you. I muddle through it. Basically, I'm not very good.
When I see him without you, he often says, "Where's Jack?" So he actually does ask after you.
Oh, so shucks. That's warm, my little cockles.
We got stuck into making up jokes for about, an hour of having food.
Jokes, but the wrong word for what it was.
he's 4 years old, and whenever, or maybe just a little bit older now, but whenever he says something, but every time he'd say, oh, tell me a joke, and it has to be about a farm.
Yeah, he sets always the boundaries, doesn't he? Because I tried telling a joke, and he said, no, we're doing farm jokes.
No, we're doing farm jokes.
Oh, right, okay, shit.
But the joke is always pretty harsh. It's like, why did the cow leave the field? Why? Because all the other cows hated it and had no friends who had to leave. And then he doesn't laugh. He just looks a bit sad.
That's the caliber of joke we're moving on to. Yeah.
And he looks quite deflated after he said it. He's like, he's going,
I don't know why I talk to those lads. I always leave in a worse mood than when I started.
But then he had his first taste of being at a lads' round table within the beer garden. Because when we finished food, we all went outside with our beers and he sat by us and he made everyone in a circle tell a joke. And then
basically slamming his dad,
mostly. Yeah. Just saying his dad shits himself, and that was going down pretty well.
That was the running theme. That was the through line through every single joke, and it was getting absolute great reactions from Oscar.
Well, I did say, I asked him, I said, Oscar, tell me a secret about your dad. He says, well, every time he makes me breakfast, he has to go and have a poo afterwards. which is cannon fodder for her. Right, should we start...
Let's get over to get it on with it. Do your classic segue.
Right, let's think of a segue here. Oh well, obviously. So, I don't know what we're doing today. What we're doing? We're doing. It's about.
It's mythology.
It's the legends.
Yeah.
Well, I would. well, from two living legends, me and Jack.
Oh, very good.
To some ancient legends. I don't think we're living legends, guys. I just think we're like humble folk, you know.
I don't know, mate. I mean, I was spotted in spoons that time. That's pretty legendary.
Woo. Yeah. We are the Welsh Anton Deck. Come on over, guys.
Can you imagine? I mean, I'd be all right with that title, I guess, but I wish it was higher somewhere on the
totem
pole.
Yeah, but also... We'd only be recognised by people in spoons. We'd have to like always stay true to who we are.
They are our people. Let's
they
be
are
honest,
our like people. Us, yeah. Exactly. Right. Yes. So there's your link.
There's my in. Thank you. Right. Yeah. Okay. So today's cherry picked chwedl or legend is called Manawydan Fab Llyr, or Manawydan the Son of Llyr in English, and it's a direct sequel to the story Branwen Ferch Llyr. Or Branwen, daughter of Llyr. If you're wondering why Llyr's kids are so important that they need two Mabinogion stories about them, Llyr was a big-time like deity to the Brythonic Celts. He was the god of the sea of their pantheon, if you can call it that. We did an episode on the Welsh Celtic gods, if you want to check that out as well. That's very good. If you've been listening to us for a while, you'll probably also realise that we have done the story of Branwen Ferch Llyr. We've done that once before. I can't remember when. I think it was part of one of the mythology ones.
It was part
of
one of the other ones, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think we've also then kind of come back to it. Because when we first did it, I don't think I understood the nuances of, like, you know, the standard on the goat and all that stuff.
So we've covered it a few times. So that was, his name? Llei Llaw Gyffes and Blodeuwedd, that is. The one with Branwen Ferch Llyr is the one we talked about before. It's basically Branwen is sister of the King of Britain called Bendigeidvran. She gets taken to Ireland by King Matholwch. And so Bran the Blessed, or Bendigeidvran, he has to come and rescue her with a cohort of Welsh heroes. It's a whole big epic. Yeah. It's one of the better stories, I'd say, of the Mabinogion. It's very good.
Yeah.
So go listen to that one if you haven't. There's a few spoilers in this one for the first one, the prequel.
And to find them, just type in the word Mabinogion when you're on Spotify. Yeah, when you're on our page, you'll find them.
You'll find them easy enough. But yeah, so if you haven't listened to that, you might want to pause here, go back. Otherwise, there'll be spoilers in this one. Pretty big spoilers, actually, because it talks about right at the end. But yeah, if you haven't listened to that, go listen to it. Come back to this one. Anyway, Manawydan Fab Llyr. It picks up almost straight away after Branwen Ferch Llyr. And this time we focus on the titular character of Manawydan, who is now rightful king of Britain after his brother Bendigeidvran died at the end of the last story. That was the spoiler I was on about. As well as his good mate, Pryderi, we focus on him as well, who was the king of Dyved at this time, and their respective wives as well, Rhiannon and Kigva. So after honouring Bendigeidvran's last wish and burying his head in what would become London, facing France to ward off invasion, that happens at the end of the last story, by the way, and apparently it's to do with, I think we mentioned at that time, the whole reason he does that is to ward off invasion from France. And when London is built, essentially, the tale goes, his skull was removed from the soil. And that's when it wasn't long after that the Normans came over.
The invasion.
The invasion. The skull in the ground, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so as I said, Manawydan, he's like kind of rightful king of Britain now. He's got his mate Pryderi with him, King of Dyved, and then this also includes Rhiannon and Kigva, two other characters as well. So yeah, after the skull is buried and everything, to ward off the invasion from across the water, Manawydan and Pryderi, they journey back to Dyved for a well-earned rest. After all, in the last story, the Welsh heroes basically destroy all of Ireland, so they've earned like a bit of a rest and a few jars. When they returned, Pryderi was reunited with his wife, Kigva, and they all began to settle down and enjoy a nice life of peace. Manawydan actually even married Pryderi's widowed mother, Rhiannon, goddess of the horses. Now, you assume this is quite a sly thing, don't you? Like, imagine your mate marrying your mum. But when I was writing this, I was thinking, what if, like, you were my new stepdad? That'd be kind of class. That'd be really cool. Imagine every family event you're there. I'd be like
that would actually be class.
My mum would be the most
Julie's
pissed off.
Lovely.
You know what? She deserves a nice bloke. I know you're a nice fella. You know?
Yeah, I treat her like a diamond.
Exactly, treat her like a diamond. And like, I mean, my mum might be a bit pissed off when at the family gatherings, me and you, just thick as thieves. But
or when your mum's giving me a bit of like hard work, I do that rock rolling the eyes face, you know, and that meme with the rock going, oh.
I'd be all over that as well. Like you do,
I look over you, I do the...
What's she like?
I do the hand, the hand mouth. You know, when your hand claps like a little mouth, going, yep.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, am I right?
The amount of things you'd be like, oh, you know what she's like? Oh, don't I? So I think that'd be quite good. So obviously, Manowar Dan and Pryderi, they obviously such good mates. They're like, this is a band setup. This is great. Yeah. So anyway, dream family setups aside, life was good for our two couples for a while. In Dyfed's, chilling out in Dyfed, until one night when all four were feasting together, a crack of thunder shook the very ground and a dark mist descended across the land. By morning, the mist had lifted, but the two heroes and their wives noticed that every domesticated animal, person, and building had disappeared, leaving them as the only four people in the land of Cymru. This didn't shake them as much as you'd imagine it would, right? Or it should.
pretty calm.
As with a lot
also,
of Welsh...
Also, for context, like, magical stuff is happening quite a lot, isn't it, in the Mabinogion? So
you have to take that into account, because if you read the Mabinogion, you realise that, I remember reading a passage one time, and it was like, someone sees, like, a herd of unicorns, like, coming over a crest of a hill. They don't even bother looking. That's not even worth noticing to them. That's how, so they're in a world of magic at the moment, you know. Yeah. So although that is worrisome, the fact that they're not, like, losing their heads.
It's like when we lose power. It's like, we've lost power. It'll probably come back.
Something will
it's
sort
like
it
when
out.
You have a power edge. Yeah. The grid will get onto that, I'm sure. Mm.
And you got to remember as well, these people, like, Rhiannon is the goddess of horses. Manawydan, he was the son of the god of the sea. And things like this, you know. So they're kind of au fait with, like, magical shit going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, like I said, they realise they're the only four people in Cymru now, in Wales, because this mist has taken not just every person, I don't know why so specifically, every domesticated animal, right? So farm animals, dogs, all that sort of stuff, they're gone. But wild animals are still there. And also every building, which is a pain in the ass. But anyway, Manowydan.
Do you know what my theory is for that?
Go on.
Because... the wild animals are, like, not been controlled or, like, man built. So the animals have been curtailed by humans.
They're part of nature still, aren't they? Yeah.
The wild ones. They're still part of nature. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. You might be onto something there. Got some subtext, mate. I like it.
Yeah.
So
that's what I've been trying to do when I read the Mabinogion stuff is not, because when I first read it, I was like, this is mental. Why is this? But you realize that it's meant to be more like storytelling, isn't it? So, like, you don't read it as gospel. You read it as like, how would that work?
And you got to think of it as like way? Also the culture when these things were written was so far removed from ours now. You kind of can't look at it in the same way you read like a novel now, you know?
I read like this really good modern version of the Mabinogion where when the first time I read the one about Blodeuwedd and them having to stand on the one foot in the bath and one on a go, when you read that just verbatim, you're like, well, this is
what
stupid.
The fuck's going
but then
on
when
here?
You have it story told to you, it's like, you could have said then, oh, for some reason, the animals, you know, if you can add narrative to it. And I think that's what you do with the Mabinogion, isn't it? You
make it into a story. I think it's all part of like the fact they were an oral culture as well, you know, so these you had to be a bit of an orator to like tell these stories.
Yeah, you get like the gist written down on paper, then you orate the rest of it.
Exactly. So, as I said, these are the only four people now left in the land of Cymru. Manawydan and Pryderi, because they were very skilled hunters and warriors, they lived off wild animals of the land for a time, ensuring to provide for their wives, even without the convenience of a shelter or like hunting dogs or anything like that to aid them. But the hardship of living off the land wore both couples down, and despite Pryderi's desire to stay in his kingdom and figure out the mystery of the mist, all four decided to try their luck across the border in the land of the Saeson, a.k.a. the English.
You know, times are tough then.
Times are tough. The four of them settled in a town and began to earn bed and board by making and selling trinkets and weapons. This setup would never last long, though, as Celts were the finest craftsmen in ancient Britain, and the jealous English would only tolerate the competition for so long before driving the two couples away. To avoid bloodshed, Manawydan, Pryderi, Rhiannon, and Cigfa would always move village to village or town to town until the resentment of their superior skills grew infamous in the land of Lloegr, aka England, and the two pairs opted to journey back to their homeland of Dyved, much to Pryderi's joy. I do think this was like a... You'll realise by the end of the story that going to England wasn't that important in the story. And I just like that they go, they just went, yeah, went over England. Yeah. And like, thing is, they're all fucking rubbish. Jealous of how cool we were and how good we were. So we just fucked them off. Yeah. I just love that. It's just get a dig in at the English. Why not? I imagine the time that these things were written, especially because these were written down way later than the original stories were created.
Yeah.
The resentment to the English at the time probably went, yeah, we went over to the England and they were really shit and they were knobs to us.
So
yeah.
Stupid.
And they were really crap at crafts and we were really good. Anyway, whatever. Back to story. So yeah, after the two couples, they get settled into a life of living off the land once again in Dyved. Pryderi and Manawydan are out hunting one day when Pryderi glimpses a white boar foraging in the woods. Pryderi thinks this would be quite a prize kill, not to mention the bounty of meat on his bones, and so sets off to chase the beast with Manawydan hot on his heels. They both follow the boar until it runs into a clearing with a huge towering fort at the centre. This strikes them as odd, considering they haven't seen a building since the Night of the Mist, and Pryderi insists on investigating the fort against Manawydan's protests. Pryderi enters the fort and climbs the numerous sets of stairs, one after another, each one leading to another empty floor until he reaches the very top of the tower. There, the room once again is empty apart from an altar with a beautifully crafted golden bowl at its centre. Pulled in by an irresistible draw, Pryderi lifts the bowl to investigate, but finds his feet have melted to the stone floor, fusing them in place. The same thing happens to his hands, melding his fingers into the golden bowl. The Dyvedian king tries to scream out for his companion, but before he can, the same sticky fusing repeats itself across his lips, sealing his mouth silent, save for panicked, muffled groans. Manawydan waited until nightfall for his friend to return, calling out for him all the while. But as night descended and sensing some ill magic within the tower, he opted to fetch help instead of storming the fort alone. The first, indeed, the first of his allies that he came across with his wife was his wife Rhiannon, who ran to the fort, terrified for her son after Manawydan told her the news. Chasing her, Manawydan saw as Rhiannon entered the gloomy fort, but before he could follow, the same dark mist that blighted the lands before appeared once again and shrouded the whole fort. When the mist lifted, the tower, along with Pryderi and Rhiannon, were gone. Cigfa weeps when Manawydan tells her what happened, and the two of them vow to find their partners and end the curse of the mist in Cymru. As time goes by, both are no closer to finding the source of the mist, let alone how to revert the damage that's been done. Down one hunter, the two remaining Cymru attempt to cultivate the land and sow three fields of wheat to make gathering food easier. One morning, as Manawydan returns to check their fields, he finds that one of the fields has been ruined, making the crop completely useless. Thinking this is a flaw in his agricultural skills, he hopes for the best for the remaining two fields. The next morning, Manawydan and Cigfa return to their crops to see another field has been ruined. With one remaining and a suspicion of foul play looming, Manawydan hides in the nearby shrubs and waits all night to find the cause of his field's ill fortune. At the stroke of midnight, he sees a small army of mice attacking and ruining the remaining field, led by a much larger mouse, squeaking as if issuing commands to its smaller comrades. Using his godly quickness, Manawydan snatches up the leader mouse in a flash, holding him by the thick of its tail. The large rodent chirping panic squeaks. Manawydan hangs the leader mouse on a tree branch from his own tail and shouts into the night, declaring his intention to slit the creature's throat by the next day. When the sun rises the next morning, Manawydan and Cigfa, camped beneath their captured rodent foe, are greeted by a scholar. Confused at seeing another person in Wales, the scholar explains that he's travelled from a far out land and that he will exchange a precious collection of books in exchange for the leader mouse. Manawydan refuses outright and sends the scholar away. Hours go by before the camp is approached again, this time by a priest. He too says he is from a far off land and offers beautifully crafted holy relics in exchange for the large mouse. Once again,
Brother Lee?
Sorry?
Was it Brother Lee?
Brotherly. Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry. Brother Liam.
He's arrived. Yeah.
Brother Liam's come back again. He's made his. He was an apparition from ancient Celtic Wales. And this is Brother Lee. We've come for an intervention. You need to stop drinking 5 days in a row. Yeah. Oh, so yeah, this where was I? So the priest, yeah, he offers him holy relics, finely crafted holy relics in exchange for the large mouse. Once again, Man of Wisdom refuses, sends the priest away. A third man approaches in the evening, this time a bishop. The bishop is once again from a far-off land and offers a chest of blessed gold for the mouse's life. Man of Wisdom refuses again, but this time his visitor asks him, what would it take for him to hand over his prisoner? Man of Wisdom responds that the only thing he'll exchange for the life of his captured enemy is for Pryderi and Rhiannon to be returned to them, along with everyone and everything the cursed mist took from the land. The jig is up, and the bishop, with a flicker of his hand and a shimmer of magic, transforms into a flamboyantly dressed enchanter. The magician agrees to Man of Wisdom's terms, explaining that the mouse he captured is in fact his wife, and that a dark wizard, Lloyd ap Kilcoyd, cursed her into the form of a mouse, promising to return her to her natural form if the enchanter unleashed the wicked mist on the land of Cymru as a revenge for his lord's humiliation at the hands of Rhiannon and her late husband Pwyll. I'll touch on that later about what happened in the previous story. Once the enchanter had conjured the mist, Lloyd went back on the agreement, using the mouse wife as leverage to keep the land plagued by the destructive fog. The enchanter, rathering his wife alive as a mouse than dead, reverses the curse of the fog, returning all the Welsh to the land, along with its buildings and domesticated animals, Pryderi and Rhiannon included. Gladdened by the return of his wife, his friend and country, Man of Wisdom vows to help the enchanter reverse the curse laid upon his wife and bring Lloyd ap Kilcoyd to the swift justice of his sword. And that's it for Man of Wisdom Vard Llir, basically. I did take some liberties with that storytelling, by the way, just to make it a little bit more...
Yeah, I think we did that with the one, the last series we did. Yeah. We said we'd start.
We all say that we do. Basically, that's what everyone did. This version of the story you're hearing is probably so different from the original story because everyone adds their own little flair to it. Basically.
Do you remember the one I did about the.
Oh, the Thousand Cuts, Poit, wasn't it?
Yeah. Poitli's story. I read when I was reading about the Mabinogion, it says these are stories to evolve.
Yeah.
So like you're meant to kind of add your own little tale as it goes along. That's
well,
what these
Poitli is another big character in the Mabinogion. And like I said, so this Lloyd ap Kilcoyd, he works for I can't remember his name now, his name was like Gwawr or something. In another story, Poitli and Rhiannon, because Poitli is Rhiannon's ex husband or widowed husband, is that the right term?
Yeah.
Basically, I won't go into it totally because it's quite a good story. We might do it another time. But they just like massively humiliate him in a previous story. So that's why he's like sent this like evil wizard after them to like fuck over their land and everything. But yeah, I thought that was quite a good one.
Yeah, I really like that one. I think I remember reading that in the book because the illustration in the book that I read in the modern version one, you have all these mice all over the place for a while and they like, it feels like Roald Dahl style story.
Yeah. Well, I did change it because I said that Man of Wisdom threatened to like slit the throat of the big mouse. He actually threatens to hang him, and I just had this very funny idea of like tiny little gallows for mice that he'd like built.
Also, that mist, is that I think that's probably the inspiration for the Mabinogion game coming out. We had
exactly right. He mentioned that, I think, in the episode, because I remember I was reading this one again. I don't know why he didn't draw the connection beforehand. I think he mentioned it. And then I was like, oh, shit, this is exactly what he's on about. It's this, like, dodgy mist that,
he has consumes that as, like, everything. Some sort of, like... It helps the character along, doesn't it? But
it's like a narrative tool, isn't it, to push you in the right direction? I think to like make you further on the game or whatever. But yeah, check that episode out, listeners, if you haven't had that one, because that's coming out. It's got to be soon, isn't it? I think.
It won't be too long till that's out. I think he said it's coming out in 2025. Everything's going along as it should do. So. When it does come out, though, I'm sure we'll put a plug on here. We'll let people know.
Yeah. Well, our level for being involved in like sort of guests initiatives now has gone way up, hasn't it? Because since director Dan said we could be in a pub scene in his film, now I expect that on everything. I'm like, why aren't we a voice actor on that game? Why haven't you gotten us in?
I was going to say to you then, I really like these Mabinogion ones, especially when we make them. I think when we first started doing them, we didn't try and tell them as a story. We tried to tell them as fact, which is not how it should be done.
Yeah,
I think it's much better when we rewrite it ourselves.
And once you sort of start looking into it enough, you realise that trying to tell it as fact is kind of like oxymoronic, in that like, there is no definitive version, because whatever version you heard, but basically back in the day, whether you were Celts or like sort of, you know, early medieval or whatever, before any of this started being written down, it would just be the version like your mum or dad told you. And it could be so different from someone else up north, or like, the main story beats are usually the same. But this even with this, like I think I found like three versions online that had differences.
Yeah.
And I just sort of tweaked it myself a bit.
It's like remastering films or remaking a film, isn't it? You know, you have the same beats of it, but you have different elements.
Yeah. Essence and like, but you just add a little bit of your own poetic license, as they say.
Like the what's it called? The Planet of the Apes stuff. Like that's been remade a bunch of times, and it's the same idea. But it's, you know, put executed slightly differently. So I think we should keep doing these. I want to do one a series. So every I know the listeners don't know when we start a new series, but on our admin we do know. So I've got another one this series, and then I think we should do one each every series, and then we'll cover a lot of the Mabinogion by the time.
I bought that when we went to Chepstow. I bought that new Mabinogion, Jesus, book.
Yeah,
and I'm keen to go through that. And even if we recover some of the stuff we've covered before, I wouldn't mind just going through if it's worth doing again.
I agree. Yeah,
I think we
should do that with some of our early episodes anyway. Some of the ones where we didn't quite know what we were doing. I don't know if we do now, but you know, we're more aligned with how the podcast. I think when we were finding our voice in the first, like, you know, the first 10
episodes, I think some of the season one episodes could 100% be redone, because they're such because we did a lot
of audio,
shit quality audio. We were very much finding our way on how to do podcasting,
what we wanted the pod to be like.
And unfortunately, we did pick some, like, it was like some of the big hitter historic events. So like, I feel like we're almost off limits now, but I think it's perfectly fine for us to like dust them off and do them again.
Yeah. I reckon, I'd definitely like to revisit some of them and retell them. So that'll get, we'll do that. That was class. Diane, do some grand. Oh, we always forget to ask, but do drop us a 5-star. It really helps. So if you do it right now, whilst I'm yapping, go to your podcast app and drop us 5-star.
Do it now. Come open on. It up right now and just do it.
I mean, you're literally listening, so please do. It does help us quite a lot in terms of getting reach. So, cheers, guys.
Anyway, we've been up to you. Like torches blazed with light.